Association of Major Waterborne Disease Outbreaks and Heavy Precipitation Events.
Good morning. Today I'll be talking about some methods to assess temporal association of waterborne disease outbreaks and heavy precipitation events. And I've been working with Al Ozanoff, also at Boston University, so I want to give a thanks to him for his help. I have no financial relationships to disclose. We all know that major weather events can have pretty big public health consequences, and here we see Katrina, so that's a teaser for the next presenter, since he's going to be covering that. And here we see some floods from the last year in the United States and in the United Kingdom. We also know that long-term climate change models predict that for a large portion of the United States, we're going to see increased annual rainfall, often due to increased frequency and magnitude of heavy precipitation events. More flooding photos. Waterborne disease burden worldwide is very high. Worldwide, we see 1 to 2 million children under the age of five die every year from diarrheal diseases. And the United States is not immune to this. We see hundreds to thousands of individuals get sick from waterborne diseases every year. Lots of different factors play into that. Aging water treatment infrastructure, treatment process failure, contamination of water pipes, which means the water is correctly treated, but during transit from the plant to your kitchen sink, something goes wrong. And of course, there's inherently lack of sanitation in the lakes and ponds that we play in. We do know that heavy rainfall has been implicated in numerous waterborne disease outbreaks historically. This can happen lots of different ways. Sometimes you have very heavy rainfall, which leads to runoff, and if that goes through an agricultural area, you can have contamination of water sources. The increased volume due to the storm water can be a problem for combined sewage systems, and we'll see that on the next slide. Heavy rainfall is associated with increased turbidity of water. That can both be a proxy for contamination of the water. It also can be a problem for certain treatment methods. And in one case, a big storm caused a lightning strike that triggered an accidental sewage release. Much of the country has a combined sewer system. What happens is, when you have rainfall, it washes into the streets, which goes into the gutter, which then goes into the sewage system. Normally, that's not a problem, and the capacity of the sewage system is such that it can just absorb that. When you have heavy rainfall events, you can exceed the capacity of the system, and the storm water joins the sewage, and if the capacity is exceeded, you end up having to discharge untreated, essentially diluted sewage water into the water body nearby. Unfortunately, that body may actually serve as the source of your drinking water, and if it becomes too heavily contaminated, normal treatment procedures will not actually remove all of the contaminants. The World Health Organization, in their report, Climate Change and Human Health, did raise this as a concern, and it was a brief section, the paper, because they also said that they don't have the analytic methods, essentially, right now to address it thoroughly. There's definitely an absence of methods to appropriately investigate this question, so this is what inspired us to start working on it. There's one major paper from 2001. Curiero et al. Looked at the 548 reported outbreaks in the U.S. from 48 to 94. They gathered watershed information, and they had monthly rainfall totals. And they found that over half of the outbreaks were preceded by rainfall events in the 90th percentile. Over two-thirds were preceded by rainfall events in over the 80th percentile. But this was aggregate monthly cumulative data. We wanted to find out, do single-day events have an important role to play? It certainly seems logical that a slightly wet month, if the ground can actually absorb it, may not lead to anything, whereas a couple of days of really heavy deluge could have an impact, but your monthly rainfall total may not actually be abnormally high. Small outbreaks occur pretty frequently, but the large ones are rare, and the large ones have major public health impacts. The example that everyone always refers to is the Cryptosporidium outbreak in Milwaukee in 1993. Over 400,000 people got sick, over 100 people died, over $100 million in productivity and medical costs. So our first question was, do heavy rainfall events precede the major waterborne disease outbreaks? To address this and develop methodology, we worked with the publicly available data. The CDC presents the waterborne disease outbreak summaries biannually in their MMWR. So we hand abstracted from the PDFs all of the information on drinking water and untreated recreational water outbreaks. untreated recreational water, lakes, ponds, streams, places that people go swimming, as opposed to chlorinated pools. We didn't think that was likely to have a tie-in to rainfall. We made some basic exclusions, had 286 outbreaks that we started with. We wanted to work with major outbreaks, so we looked for a natural break in the size data and ended up with roughly the top 8%, and that led us to 23 major outbreaks to work with. We then wanted to get highly detailed temporal and spatial information for those outbreaks. Because we were working on data that only told us the state, the month, and the year, we were not able to find information using libraries, public health reports, newspaper reports for all of them, so we had 15 to work with. If I were presenting results to you today, I would be concerned because, A, that's a very small set, and B, I don't know that the 8 that we didn't look at are fundamentally different from the 15 we do, but since this is a methods focused presentation, we're not going to worry too much about that issue. Our rainfall data came from the National Climatic Data Center, and we just chose the weather station that was closest to the outbreak site that was continuously operated and had good quality data. We looked at the overall data set to just get a feel for what the outbreaks look like. Not surprisingly, outbreaks that are associated with drinking water are much larger than those associated with recreational water. We also looked at specific organisms to see if any of them tended to cause larger outbreaks than others. And we also looked at drinking water to see if surface water or well water had larger outbreaks than others. This is non-parametric analysis, and really none of those looked very interesting, at least based on the data we have currently. So this is the data for all of the untreated recreational waterborne disease outbreaks, and it's broken down by the month that they occurred in. It is hardly surprising that people get sick in lakes and ponds during the summer months. We do know that rainfall tends to be a little higher in the summer for much of the U.S., but looking at this, you would think, well, clearly what's going on is people are at risk at that time of year. However, we do see that the drinking water outbreaks follow a similar pattern. And that's when you start to think, well, maybe seasonality does have a component. Obviously, this is an ecologic approach, but it is encouraging to see that pattern. And it does raise the issue of seasonality. Lots of diseases have a seasonal pattern. Rainfall clearly has a seasonal pattern, and any analysis looking at heavy rainfall events prior to outbreaks needs to take that into consideration. And just as an example that most people are familiar with, I grabbed a slide from CDC showing their influenza data. As we all know, influenza cases certainly pick up during the winter, and if you're doing surveillance or looking for an early warning system, you need to think about what time of year you're looking at so that you can put it in proper context. To make sure that we address the seasonality issues, we wanted to make sure that we were looking specifically in the location and at the same time each year to get a feel for what normal is. So we decided we would look at 2, 4, and 8 weeks prior to the outbreak, and we were looking for rainfall that exceeded 1 inch, 1 inch, 1.5 inch, 2 inch. 1 inch is the most commonly used one in most papers, but we wanted to cast a broader net to get a feel for how this would work out. We evaluated the same time period in other years for rainfall events. So essentially, if San Diego had an outbreak on, say, April 1st, we would be looking at the 2, 4, and 8 weeks prior to that in the years 1977 to 2007 to see how often do we expect heavy rainfall, very specifically in this area. This is an example of one of our results, and there's one problem with this slide that I was not able to fix. The columns here should all be shifted one to the right. So that little blip there is not actually associated with zero, it's associated with one. The red line is in the correct place. So what we're seeing here is we were looking for rainfall events, single day events, greater than 1 inch in the month before the waterborne disease outbreak. And we did 1,000 simulations. We took the 15 outbreaks, and we took random years, and looked to see how often would we expect rainfall events that large in the month before these 15 outbreaks. And you can see that the probability essentially clusters closer to 5, 6, 7. In 228 of the 1,000 simulations, we saw water, heavy rainfall greater than in 8 or more of the 15 outbreaks. So that's how we get our p-value of 0.228. Obviously, that's not close to the magical 0.05, but since we're looking to develop the methods, and this is a very small number of outbreaks, we're not really concerned. And we're actually a little encouraged by that, because you can see that the p-value distribution does drop off pretty rapidly. So with a larger data set, this may actually have some very interesting significant results. In case you are curious, here are some p-values for some of the other combinations of rainfall data and the time frame windows. Again, it's just to show you that we have a pretty wide range of things. I don't feel like these are in any way truth. We did find that half-inch rainfalls are incredibly common. They're very difficult to make any conclusions about. And rainfalls greater than 2 inches are very rare, so we're clearly going to need a much larger data set to be able to work with that. So next steps, this methodology clearly addresses seasonality, which is one of the issues you have to address in order to look at this problem. We're definitely ready to scale up to a larger data set, and we have been chatting with CDC, so we're looking at doing that as soon as possible. The goal would be to use the the waterborne disease outbreak surveillance system data set that's maintained by both EPA and CDC, and they have information on outbreaks from 1971 to the present. That would be our goal. We want more years. We also would like a lot more information on each outbreak. Since we only had state, month, and year, we'd like to get much more detail. Finally, we'll probably end up redefining major outbreaks, because as we have more information, we'll be able to get a better handle on how big these things are. We know that passive reporting skews the data toward larger outbreaks, but in a way that's almost good for us, because if we're interested in the largest outbreaks so that we can get an idea of when to warn public health departments that there is an increased risk of a waterborne disease outbreak, the data favors that. We are not trying to find a pattern to address every tiny little 10-person outbreak. And the final step that we're working on right now is adding cumulative measures instead of single-day events. It may be that a single day of 1-inch rainfall is actually less meaningful than a 3-day total of 2 inches, and that has to would be within, say, 7 days or 14 days. So we're writing the programming for that right now, and hopefully we will have a larger data set to play with in the future. This work was partially supported by a BioSense grant from CDC, so we thank them. And looks like we have time for questions.
We do.
Stephen, Dr. Washington State Department of Health. I'm curious as to whether a useful data source might be from the water treatment folks, who I would expect would have
yes, once we'd like to get a handle on kind of more of the outbreaks themselves, and then I would enjoy very much getting that information for all of the major outbreaks. I did a little bit of contact with a few places and didn't get a lot of response initially, so we haven't pursued that currently since we are focusing on methodology, but as I have more outbreaks available to look at, I think that's a great suggestion, and I would love to see that information, definitely. Yes, and that was one of the things that the Curiero paper was originally trying to address, was watershed information. Ultimately, that would be another thing we'd like to explore, so it's a great suggestion again. It's a good audience. but we didn't have enough information right now to work on that, but definitely we know that sometimes the flooding comes from pretty far away, and there is some information available through USGS and other sources, and we'd ultimately like to combine that with this.
Any more questions? Thank you, Sue.
Great, thanks.
Okay, we are here at the home stretch, and our last presenter is Vivek Singh. And he will be presenting on the use of emergency department and hospital inpatient services by Hurricane Katrina evacuees.